Hey, I'm Kelby, and I love cartoons. If you're anything like me, cartoons and animation provide a well-needed escape from the stresses of the real world. So come join me in this little corner of the world that I've created for myself and for you too. We all like cartoons here. Welcome to Kelby's Cartoon Corner. This week, we're escaping into the world of Close Enough, the adult animation from the creator of regular show J.G. Quintel. I wanted to wait until season 2 was out on HBO Max, and now a week has passed since it dropped, so I hope you're ready for this one. I won't get too deep into season 2, but I will be covering it, so I'm issuing a spoiler warning now. If you're a fan of regular show and you're looking for an adult animation that's shaking up the standard, Close Enough is the show for you, so let's escape into Close Enough together. If you're just discovering Close Enough, I hope you love it as much as I do. If you're not just discovering Close Enough, I hope it's living up to the hype for you the same way that it is for me. I've established previously that I'm a really big fan of regular show, and I'm equally a fan of Close Enough. Honestly, anything that JG works on at this point, I automatically know that I'm gonna love it. So if you're new to the show, like if you just discovered it on HBO or something, you may be completely unaware of the history. As somebody who's been waiting since 2017 for it to finally be announced somewhere, I want to share a little bit about what that experience was like. So, way back in 2017, after the end of regular show, a new show from J.G. Quintel was announced, and it was called Close Enough, and it was supposed to air on TBS. There was a trailer and everything, and I remember seeing it and being super excited. I love regular show, and this was like regular show, but with humans, and they're adults. Like, I guess Mordecai and Rigby were technically adults, but these were adultier adults, you know what I mean? This was a married couple with a kid, like, next level adult. And I remember sharing that trailer on Facebook and being super excited about the show, but then I kind of forgot about it. But every year that would show up in my Facebook memories, and I'd watch it and get re-excited. But then when I would Google it, all the search results were like, we don't know either. Like, I guess it's not a thing? I don't know. And then, in the middle of the pandemic, after we had baked all the bread, cleaned every inch of our living spaces twice, and we thought all hope was lost, HBO Max launched on May 27th, and along with it, Close Enough finally dropped. And what a time to be alive and part of a fan community. Like, admittedly, I wasn't super involved in the fan community at that point, but personally, I was just lit to have this show. Like, it was finally happening. That Michael Scott gif during the fire drill, when he's like, "It's happening! It's happening!" That's what I felt like. It was finally a thing. So Close Enough follows the story of, like, okay, honestly, there's like 6 main characters, but I assume that it's supposed to be focused on Josh and Emily, in the same way that regular show was about Mordecai and Rigby, but the main cast was a bunch of different characters. Josh and Emily are a young married couple who have a 5-year-old daughter named Candace, and they live in an apartment with a divorced couple, Alex and Bridget, in LA. They all live together to save money on rent. Also part of the main cast, but not featured as often, is the landlord Pearl and her son Randy, who live next door. I just wanted to say up top how refreshing it is to have a new adult animation that focuses on, one, a young married couple, but also, two, a married couple that actually like each other. I'm happy for someone to be shaking up the Family Guy, Simpsons, American Dad, King of the Hill formula. And don't get me wrong, I like all of those shows. I'm just ready for something new and different. That's one of the things that draws people into Bob's Burgers, you know, is because Bob and Linda are weird and quirky, but they also are married and have kids, and they actually enjoy each other. Like, that feels like a revolutionary concept. And they like their kids, and they're happy in their marriage, they're content, and something mundane like that is so refreshing after having 20 or 30 years of the alcoholic dad and the mom who is resigned to stay because of the kids. Like, that just feels like the formula at this point, and I'm so glad that somebody is shaking it up a little bit. And I love that Josh and Emily are young and still kind of figuring out their life, but they're also a married couple and they like each other. Their living situation isn't ideal, but they're making it work. Like, there's an episode in season 2 where everybody is playing Nerf Wars with Candace. Season 2 starts with Josh wanting to get stronger so he can lift Candace to play with her. Just like wholesome family stuff, and I love it. They also throw a vasectomy party in season 1, so like, it balances out, and again, it's like regular show, but for adults. But beyond that, it's not just regular show for adults, because Close Enough tells some really good stories about adult life. I mean, with this being an adult animation, they can get away with more stuff like that. There's an episode where Josh and Emily are trying to spice up their love life. Also, this episode starts with Josh making a Halloween costume so he and Candace can go trick-or-treating together. And just like, It's beyond just them being young and married and enjoying each other, but he seems like a dad who is trying, you know? He spends time with Candace, and not because he has to, because he wants to, because he's her parent. And I'm realizing how refreshing it is to see a man who wants to share the parenting load, but again, beyond that, he just wants to be a dad, and he's happy being a dad. And just, like, mind-blowing. It's just... Again, and it shouldn't be a revolutionary concept to have a character like that in an adult animation, but it is. Like, personally, I can't imagine having a parent who isn't involved on this level. My dad worked second shift in a factory for most of my early life, but he was always there, you know? We did stuff together. He played Barbies with me. I mean, we played dad-style Barbies where he... All right, listen, I don't know how else to explain this, but I promise I was having the time of my life, and I am not traumatized. Like, this was honestly very fun. I just want to say that outright because, again, I don't know how else to explain this. He would lay under my bed and, like, whip Barbies at me, and I had to jump over them. And again, that's how we played Barbies, and for the longest time, I had no idea there was any other way to play with Barbies. So imagine my surprise going over to a friend's house to, like, play Barbies for the first time when I'm, like, six, only to find out that that's not how you're supposed to play with them. You're not supposed to lay under the bed and just flick them at each other and jump over them like some American Ninja Warrior course. Revolutionary concept. Barbies are not for just flicking at each other. I typed this out, and I immediately thought of that scene in Bridge to Terabithia where... what is the kid's name? The boy. His younger sister, who I think her name is Mabel, says, asks if new girl at school... It's been a hot minute since I've read or seen Bridge to Terabithia, so just bear with me. She says, do you want to come over and play Barbies? And she's like, oh, I don't have any Barbies. And she says, oh, it's okay, I have plenty, but we play extreme Barbies, where you, like, throw them off the roof and flush them down the toilet. Like, that was me. That's my version of Barbies. That's the only way I know how to play, is, like, rough. Because I played with my dad. I don't know any other way to do it. Okay, so I'm gonna go off on a little bit of a tangent here for a second because I just realized how hard I relate to the story of Close Enough from Candace's point of view, so bear with me for a second because I promise this is going somewhere. It'll come full circle. One of the things... hold on, let me take a breath. I have ingested so much caffeine in the last, like, 36 hours. I have no idea how I haven't just, like, died. So much caffeine. So hold on, let me calm myself down, and then we'll get back into this. I wish I had some, like, weird elevator music to play in the background while I just, like, breathe. Okay, we're back. One of the things about growing up is realizing how much of the world exists outside of your little bubble where you grew up. Does that make sense? Like, when I was a kid, I assumed that my experience was the standard. A dad who was super involved, a mom who stayed home and took care of the house, parents who love each other, families that celebrated holidays together. But then as I got older, I realized how privileged I was because not everyone around me had that same home environment. Like, our family was never super wealthy, but we weren't poor either. We were solid middle class, you know? But, like, as a kid, I didn't know or I didn't care. My parents stayed home with us. We played board games and Legos. We built train tracks across the entire living room. My dad introduced us to 80s sci-fi movies, and we made up dumb games that I honestly can't wait to teach my future kids. Y'all, we invented this game. It's called Up and Down. And it is every bit as simple as you think it is. My brother and I would sit at the top of the stairs and toss balls down the stairs to our dad, who would then toss them back up to us. And that was it. That was the whole game. We had a rule that the balls had to be soft so nothing would break because the staircase in my parents' house is right by the front door. And I think we may have had an instance where one of us whipped a ball really hard at the door and, like, almost broke the glass. So we then initiated a rule that all the balls had to be soft. So, like, part of the thing of playing up and down was that we had to rummage through all of our toys and find specific balls that we could use so that we didn't break things. But also, we had to sit at the top of the stairs so we didn't fall down the stairs. But that was it. And we would play that game for what felt like hours. And Mom would sit in the living room and catch foul balls and toss them back while she watched TV or, like, back and forth from doing the dishes in the kitchen or whatever. But, like, that... that's classic dad stuff in my head. And all of that feels like the kind of bond that Josh and Candace have. Like, again, he wants to be a dad. He's excited to be a parent. And you can feel that in his character. And to me, personally, that's, again, super refreshing, but also super indicative of my personal experience growing up. I knew I loved the show, but I didn't realize how deep that love went until just now. So, all right, rant over. I'm going to keep talking about Close Enough. Actually, while we're on the topic, I think one of the best examples of Josh wanting to be a good dad is from the season one episode Skate Dad. I think this is episode like 2 or 3. It's very early on. In this episode, Josh is trying to find a common interest for him and Candace to share, and he starts with showing her all of his old toys, which she is not interested in at all. And so Emily brings a box into the living room of stuff to donate, and in the box is Josh's old skateboard, and that gets Candace's attention, and she's really excited. So Josh offers to teach her how to skate. Again, I'm trying to take deep breaths. They go to a skate shop to pick out the board, and I just have to say that I have to play this scene out for you because it's funny. So they look at the wall of skate decks, and Candace picks out this board with a pentagram and like a very detailed picture of Satan. And Emily and Josh are like, huh, they're a little sketched out at first, but not because of the board, like the picture on it. It's because the board costs $100. So the dude who works at the skate shop, his name is The Goosh, and he offers them a board that's on sale, but it's just a picture of his abs. And Emily's like, oh, The Goosh. And like her eyes get all lit up. And then Josh is like, that's a little inappropriate for children. We'll take the Satan board. And just like, I love that dialogue. That feels very regular show to me, and I appreciate it. They get the board and they go to the skate park, and Candace asks Josh if he can teach her how to ollie, and he tries, but he like jackknifes himself onto the board and falls into the bowl. Like, he ends up having to have a metal plate put in his crotch, I don't really know. And he's upset because he wanted to teach Candace how to skate, but now he's like a meme because he fell so hard onto his skateboard. He ends up falling asleep because he's so jacked up on pain pills, and when he wakes up, he's in the car with Emily, who went back to the skate shop and signed Candace up for skate lessons. And let me just tell you, every time I watch this episode, I get like irrationally angry at Emily because Josh wanted to be the one to teach her. Like, that was their special thing that they were gonna do together, and it feels like Emily just like did not get that. And maybe she just realized that Josh is very bad at skating and probably a danger to himself. But still, she says, I went back to the skate shop and signed Candace up for lessons. And every time I watch this episode out loud, I say, but I wanted to be the one to teach her. Like, it's frustrating. And I feel like Josh should have said that. And like, he kind of does later, but in this moment, I feel like he needed to say that to Emily. Like, hey, this was like, I appreciate that, but this was my thing that I was going to do with Candace. And now you took her back to The Goosh and signed her up for skate lessons. And I'm peeved. I don't think I've ever actually used the word peeved in like real life. All right. So Josh is waiting in the car, watching Candace get skate lessons from The Goosh, and she falls over off her board and scrapes her knee. The Goosh comes over and puts a band-aid on it and kisses her knee, which feels a little bit sketch to me, but I understand that it's not meant to be. It's just like, it's just a thing. But like, that was the last straw for Josh. So he busts out of the car and comes over and tells his family that they're leaving. And Emily turns around and says, calm down, sore groiny weaver. And I forgot that that was a line in this episode, and I needed about 30 full seconds to recover from that when I watched this episode. Josh challenges The Goosh to bomb Baxter Street with him, and like, I don't skate, so I don't really know what the goal of this is. Is it a race, or is it just to see who can stay on their board the longest? I don't know. I assume it's supposed to be like a race, but Also, wasn't there an episode of Rocket Power where they did the same kind of thing? Like, Otto had just gotten hurt doing something very minor, like the week before, like he had broken his leg or something, and then like the moment he could walk, he went to go skate down this enormous hill to prove something. I don't know. I would love to watch Rocket Power. I just want to rewatch that show. Fingers crossed that it's going to come to Paramount Plus if it's not already. We don't have Paramount Plus yet, but we will eventually, just not right now. We cannot afford another streaming service. Y'all are gonna have to get your stuff together because I can't. So anyway, they get up to the top of Baxter Street, and Emily is telling Josh how stupid this is, and Candace comes to the edge of the hill, and she says, skate or die, and just like plummets over the hill. So Emily takes off after her, Josh follows, and then The Goosh follows them because he hasn't The Goosh hasn't teachened them how to, good God. All right, again, we have had entirely too much caffeine. Okay, the Goosh follows them down the hill because he hasn't taught Emily and Candace how to bomb hills yet, so he's concerned. As they're rocketing down this hill, Josh tells the Goosh how he wanted skating to be a special thing that he and Candace did together, and he says that he's trying to be a different kind of dad than his dad was. And the Goosh is like, oh, lit. Yeah, okay, I'll back off. And then he just, like, bails out. I mean, he doesn't, like, yeet off his skateboard. He just stops. Like, okay. Emily is able to get Candace and scoop her off the board, and then Emily's board, like, explodes or something? I don't remember. But then she jumps back onto Josh, and his board can't handle the weight of having three people on it, so it just, like, snaps in half. There is a very specific scene where there's a truck backing up across the road, and Emily says that they gotta go under, and Josh, like, sheds a single tear and spreads his legs so far apart that his crotch rubs on the ground and it sparks. And, like, with the context of this episode, I'm less worried about his crotch, but the scene was in the original trailer for Close Enough that later we found out was just... it wasn't taken from episodes, right? It was just, like, clips plastered together to make something to be able to pitch this show. It didn't come from anywhere. But this specific scene was in the trailer, and there was no context that Josh's crotch had a metal plate on it. It was just, like, in the trailer, it was made to seem like his just bare crotch was just rubbing on the pavement, and it just, like, that was the cause of the one single tear. Which, like, honestly, man, I don't blame you, because I can't even imagine. Yeet. So... again, it was not explicitly stated that he had a metal crotch, and it, like, made me cringe in the trailer, but now having the context, it's really funny. Like, that's why it sparked, because his crotch is all metal. So they skate out from under this truck, and Josh's crotch is on fire. Like, literally, it's aflame. So he ramps off this other truck onto someone's roof, and then he, like, turns around. He very deliberately, like, sets Emily and Candace down and, like, pats them and is like, you... he doesn't say anything, but he, like his body language is like, you stay here. And then he jumps into this pool to put out the fire in his crotch. And, like, the Goosh is watching from the top of the hill. He looks down and he says, that's not a skate dad, that's a skate father. And that's the end of the episode, but just, it's very fun. I really like this because, again, it's Josh wanting to be a dad, and he wants to bond with Candace. Like, this episode starts with him making a cute breakfast shaped like a bunny. Like, this man loves his daughter. He loves being a dad, and you will not convince me otherwise. The second episode in that block, along with Skate Dad, also shows that Josh is, like, a competent partner to Emily as well. Like, there's this whole thing about women having the mental workload of the house because... there's always 574 things that need to be done, and it feels like guys just don't see all the things that need to be done. I know that's not true of every partnership, but again, it's one of the things that I appreciate about Close Enough. And it's not that Josh notices all the things that need to be done and he just, like, jumps in and does them, but he notices that Emily is stressed, and so he steps in and says, you know what, you take the day off and I will do all the things. And he scoops up Candace and he takes Alex and they go out and they do all the errands so Emily can have a day off. And this is one of those episodes that is made way better by having some regular show style antics thrown in. There have been a string of ham burglaries around the city, and no one has ham for some reason. And there's a B plot with some weird sex clowns that are following Alex around the city. And when the storylines converge, Emily comes home to her family playing a VR video game that Josh designed with weird sex clowns in their living room. And again, regular show style antics, but, like, turned up to 11 because regular show would never have been able to get away with sex clowns. I mean, there was a whole episode where Mordecai tried to forget that he saw Pops naked, only to see Benson naked at the end, and I'm honestly kind of surprised that they got away with that on Cartoon Network. So, alright, I am going to take a break from hyping up Josh, although apparently I could do that for a while. I want to talk about the ensemble cast as a whole, and I think their dynamic is really fun in the episode Logan's Run. So in this episode, Bridget tells Josh and Emily that they're, like, old and boring because they're at home on a Friday night watching TV. So they decide that they're all going to go out and party like they used to. And by they, I mean Emily, Josh, and Alex, because Bridget is way younger than the rest of them. Also, I think Josh and Alex are supposed to be the same age, although I always assumed that Alex is, like, 40. I honestly have no idea how old any of these characters are. The only one that we know for sure is Bridget, and she's 26. I assume everyone else is at least in their 30s, like 32 or 33. Anyway, not old, but just not up for going out and partying like they used to, but whatever, they decide that they're going to go out. They go to this bar called Logan's, and the bartender asks for their IDs, but rather than making sure that they're of age to be drinking, he wants to make sure that they aren't too old, which isn't really made apparent until later, but whatever. It cost Josh like $200 for 3 shots of tequila, and that would have been enough for me to be like, you know what, never mind, peace out, I'm going to go home and enjoy my Great British Bake Off and my lavender tea, which is what they were doing before they decided to go out. Emily, Josh, and Alex are getting lit, and meanwhile, Bridget is off with some super famous YouTuber who, like, she's super into him, but then at the end, he reveals that he's actually a toddler, which is cringe because Bridget was so into him, but even after that, she seems like she's still interested in this toddler, and just everything about that makes me very uncomfortable, but whatever. Bridget is, like, already my least favorite character. Like, the spoiled rich girl archetype just grinds my gears so hard. Again, just, like, irrationally angry at drawings. But it makes me mad because Bridget is, like, the character that's my age, and I don't like her. The only character that I dislike more than her is Becca in season 2, but we will get to her later. So, whatever, they're at this bar, and this guy comes in, and the bartender asks for his ID, and then he finds out that this dude is, like, 35, and so the bartender says, you qualify for our VIP treatment, and he leads him to the center of the, he, like, puts a white robe on him and leads him to the center of the bar to sit on this couch, and it, like, raises up into the ceiling while the patrons of the bar shout, VIP, VIP, and then he, like, gets blown up into this fan and, like, murdered. And, like, this scene played out, and I sat up and was immediately like, hello, Logan's Run? Which, like, I figured from the title of the episode was gonna be a theme, but to have the scene play out exactly like it does in the movie was like, whoa. I feel like I'm not supposed to know about Logan's Run, right? I'm 25. That movie is from 1976. And I'm a sci-fi fan, but, like, it just feels like this is a reference for a show that I shouldn't have immediately been like, whoa, I get that. Like, I my dad introduced us to a lot of sci-fi movies and stuff growing up, so I just, like, have knowledge of those things. But still, I just feel like Logan's Run is one of the things that I shouldn't know about. I shouldn't be that well-versed so that I can just, like, clock that reference and be like, hey, good, I like that. Hot take. Guys who were nerds in high school turn out to be the best dads. Like, my dad played D&D and watched Star Trek. This entire episode is turning into an essay about my dad. I am him, just extroverted instead of introverted. My taste in music is his. The way that I process emotions is his. I rewatch movies and TV shows until I can recite them, and it drives my mom insane. I just feel like if he had been around in the age of the internet and, like, into shows, he would have been deep in Reddit threads and fan theories. Like, he would have, like, because that's me. I don't just watch a show, right? Like, I watch it and rewatch it and pick apart different little elements of the plot and, like, research the fan theories and, like, read the fanfic and just, like, am in it. Whereas Madison can just, like, watch a show and then just, like, move on. And, like, it's like, what? That's so foreign to me. I can't do that. If I'm into a show, I'm into the show, you know? I'm, like, invested in the characters and the world and the story. All-encompassing. So anyway, I think my dad would have been a YouTube gamer, quite honestly. Like, he's told me this story where when he and, I don't know if I was around yet, but, like, he and my mom were definitely together. They were, like, living together in the house where they lived before they moved into their current house. That information is not important, but whatever. So he worked second shift, right? So he'd come home late and just be up. Like, on Tuesday nights, he used to watch boxing, or, yeah, I think it was boxing, whatever. Again, not relevant. But he would come home and he would play video games to unwind, because that's what he does. And he has told this story where he was playing whatever the very first Zelda game was for the NES. And there's, like, a level at the end where, like, if something happens, there's no, like, I don't know if it's just because it's an old game or the way the game was designed, but there's no checkpoint, right? So if you, like, die in the middle of a dungeon or whatever, you get booted out to the end, and it's like a labyrinth, so if you get lost, you're just SOL, you're just stuck in there. So he set up a camera and recorded himself playing the level so he could watch it back and know what not to do at every turn. And just, again, I think my dad would have been a YouTube gamer if he was around in this time. But anyway, moving on. So, this episode of Close Enough was the first episode that I ever showed him. I think I texted him the night the series dropped and was like, hey, they did a Logan's Run parody episode. I think you'd really like this show. And I don't know if he's watched any other episodes. Whatever. I know for sure that he's seen the Logan's Run episode because I showed it to him. I was like, hey, you would like this episode because of this specific scene that I know because I have watched this movie with you. So, like, here you go. Again, it's one of those things that I know he would like it if he would just watch it, the same way that I know my brother would like Regular Show if he would just sit down and watch it. And, okay, that's one of the things about JG's writing that I really appreciate. The music in both of his shows slaps. Both the original music for the show and the, like, copyrighted music that they use, it's mostly 80s music, and, like, I'm here for it because, again, my music taste is my dad's music taste, which is, like, 80s everything. Pop. Rock. That's it. That's the only two genres of music I can think of off the top of my head, but that's it. That's his taste in music. That is my taste in music. I appreciate it. There are some really great Regular Show Easter eggs in Close Enough, too, but beyond that, they have, both shows have good Goonies references. I mean, not this whole episode is Logan's Run parody, but that scene is enough that, like, if you know, you know. And that's all that an Easter egg needs to be. Just a smidgen of something to be like, hey, I like that. That's clever. The twist of this episode is that the bartender is actually, like, 50. He says, everyone over 30 must die, just like in Logan's Run. Alright, so I thought that Alex said his age outright in this episode, but he doesn't. The bartender gets suspicious of Josh and Emily, and he asks to see their IDs, but they fake it, and then Josh gives himself away by saying something about Facebook, and the bartender hits the VIP button, and Alex stands up at the back of the bar and says, I remember Blockbuster Video, and, like, holds up his Blockbuster membership card, and that gives away his age. So he willingly sacrifices himself so Josh and Emily can leave. And first of all, I remember Blockbuster Video. We had a mini Blockbuster in our Walmart, and sometimes I wonder if that was a dream, but we also had, like, an actual brick-and-mortar store in our town. And, like, I'm 25, but I remember Blockbuster Video, and I've seen Logan's Run, so, like, if we're just going by pop culture references, in this situation, I would be screwed, and I still have a solid 5 years before I hit 30. Anyway, like I said, their chemistry in this episode is really good. Alex is sad. I mean, like, literally. He's divorced and still living with his ex. He lives in a closet in a small apartment that he shares with four other people. Like, his life is kind of sad, but he's also a good friend. He's willing to sacrifice himself for Josh and Emily, and I appreciate that. Josh and Emily in this episode are just determined to prove that they aren't old, but by the end of the episode, they're like, you know what? Growing old doesn't have to suck. It's not all that bad. And then they come to terms with it. Like, Josh and Emily are the focus of the show, so their characters get hashed out a little bit better over the course of the show, but I just like them in this episode because of that full circle feeling. And look, all right, as much as I don't like Bridget for the most of, like, most of the show, like, 90% of the time she's terrible, but in this one specific episode, she did come to the rescue, kind of. I mean, she beat the crowd away with a bar stool. She wasn't about to, like, jump up and, like, catch her friends, but she was there to ward off the crowd so they could figure their shit out. They feel like a good group of friends, you know? I mean, beyond that, they're a family. They live together, but they're all good friends to each other. And again, that feels really refreshing to have in an adult animation. I appreciate genuine feelings of love and connection that these characters have to each other. Okay, originally, I had planned to talk about the entire season one finale, but I basically turned the script into an essay about Josh and how much he reminds me of my dad, and I still have to talk about season two. So, I am gonna go ahead and talk about, not all of the finale, but I just want to talk about the best joke of season one, because I love it so much. It's so fun. So, the A-plot of the finale is about Alex and Josh having a fight, because they go to medieval times on the same day every year, and Alex had to cancel this year for something really important to him. He's writing a book, and he has a meeting or something that couldn't be rescheduled. I don't remember exactly what it is, but something. And Josh gets mad that he's skipping out on their special thing that they do together, and Alex is mad that Josh isn't being more supportive, so they're just, like, at an impasse. Also, this is the only episode of the season that's 22 minutes long. There's a lot of story happening here. Alex and Josh are fighting. Candace is helping Pearl solve a crime. Bridget and Emily go away to write songs for their band. It's just a lot of story. And they all do converge at the end, but, like, none of the other things are important except for the Bridget and Emily story. Not even the whole thing, just this one very specific part. They write songs and perform in a coffee shop, and Bridget feels like Emily is always distracted with Candace, so she suggests that they go away for a weekend to focus on writing songs. Emily doesn't want to at first, but eventually she relents, and they go away together. I think Bridget goes away first and is like, fine, if you're not gonna come, I'm not gonna let this cabin go to waste. So she like goes away for the weekend, and then Emily meets her there to surprise her. But the whole time that they're there, Emily is still kind of distracted, and she gets a picture of Candace from Pearl, and she says before they get started, she just wants to post this picture real quick. And then Bridget grabs her phone and says, I'll show you a post, and then throws Emily's phone, and it flies around, and it hits a fence post, a postal truck, a man eating Post brand cereal, someone reading the Washington Post, a couple smoking post-coital cigarettes, the Post movie, I think, I don't know, Post Malone, and some guys playing basketball that are shouting post up. And when I tell you, I was wheezing the first time that I saw this, I had to pause and walk away. Just like top tier comedy. I really appreciate it. Also, the one thing that I always forget is the post-coital cigarettes, because like the first time that I watched this scene play out, I was just like, hit all the post things that are hitting, right? And then I like saw that and I was like, what the heck is that? And I had to go back a couple different times and be like, that is post-coital. That's funny. Also, I feel like I said post really weird. I like drew it out really hard and I didn't mean to. I'm sorry. It's late. I've had enough caffeine to murder a horse. So excuse me if I'm a little bit jittery. Also, my throat just got super dry. Y'all, listen, I'ma just tell you. I originally was going to... First of all, I was gonna record this audio this morning before I went to work, and then I wouldn't have to do all of this in one evening. But beyond that, I was going to preface... I live in a state where recreational marijuana is legal, all right? So I was going to take an edible and then do this podcast because I thought that would be super fun. But that did not happen because I also have to be coherent enough to edit later. So that didn't happen. But just let it be known that eventually, at some point, I'm going to cover an adult animation and I probably will be high. I just have to figure out which adult anime. Maybe Tuca and Birdie. Maybe we'll get stoned for that one. Anyway, we'll just keep that in the back of your minds. So when an adult animation releases in like a couple of months and you're like, something is off, that's probably it. One time, I just want to do one episode where I'm high because I'm fun when I'm high. But like, also, most of the time when I'm doing these, I have to record and then I have to edit and upload in one night because I suck at time management. So yeet. If I could get into the groove where I could be like, you know, recording and then like the next day edit and upload, or you know, whatever. Just throwing it out there. I stopped to take a drink, yo, and I remembered that the last time that we got high, I like my mouth just stopped producing saliva and I drank gallons of water trying to restore the like moisture in my mouth, and it wasn't happening. All right. Coming back in. Okay. There's also, in the trailer for Close Enough, there was like a little snippet where like Josh was, I don't know if he like took an edible or like smoked something, but he's like sitting on the couch and he's like just sitting. And then all of a sudden he's like, it's kicking in. And he like, his skin flies off and like he like disassociates from the couch. And just like, that's kind of how I felt the last time. The first time, whatever. So, all right. Because that's what I feel like would happen, right? Like, I'd be having, like, a normal conversation, just, like, in it, and then all of a sudden I'd be, like, unable to read and focus on anything. So, and then the whole episode would be, like, 3 hours long of me just, like, staring at nothing. And, like, I need to be with somebody when I do that, because I need to have somebody to keep me focused. I already, freaking, we're 40 minutes into this and we're only halfway there. So I definitely just need somebody else in here to keep me focused. Apparently I just eat. Come on, ADD. Not even like most of the time I do really well, but right now I am, again, have ingested enough caffeine to probably kill a horse. So we're just buzzing and vibrating at a different frequency. Yo, let me tell you, last night when I was typing this script, I promise I'm not high. It probably feels like I am, but I'm not. I promise I'm okay. Last night when I was finishing typing this script, I like had music in my ears, right? And all of a sudden, like it switched songs and the music went and it was like real slow. And I was like, oh no, like I have vibrated into a new plane of existence. Like the, the last episode that I released was the top 10 regular show foods. God. And in that episode, I talked about the double glazed donuts and how they ate them and they were like so high on sugar that they like vibrated into a new plane of existence. That's how I felt last night, trying to freaking focus and type and like have cohesive thought. It was just not happening. All right, so I just went on a whole rant about how I want to get high and do a podcast episode, but I'm not high, and I may as well be because I'm not freaking focusing. So anyway, let's come back in and let's talk about season two. I'm just going to run through some highlights of season two because I don't have time to talk about all of it. Also, it's kind of new still, so I don't want to, not that there's like a plot or anything, you know, like I'm not going to ruin anything for you by talking about it, but just like I want you to experience season two in the same way that I did. So I'm not going to spoil everything, but I am going to talk about some stuff. The very first episode sees Josh trying to get fit because he hurt himself playing with Candace. Like, this was a scene from the trailer for season two. He, like, picks up Candace, and then you see his spine, like, disintegrate. Like, all the discs in his spine just dissolve. And he's like, huh. And then he kind of gets stuck there, and he puts her down. He's like, okay, I'm gonna go lay down for about 8 days. And this episode is really fun, but honestly, Emily is the star of this episode. She tries so hard to focus on Josh, like, taking this to an unhealthy level, but she also thinks that Josh is really hot when he's buff like that. She literally pours ice in her pants to help herself focus, to have a conversation with him. And then there's a line where, like, Candace says something, like, she's upset because he's so focused on going to the gym and getting fit that he, like, doesn't have time to play with Candace anymore. And Candace is, like, upset, and so she says something. And then Emily says, it's important that we support him now that he's hot. And I just really appreciate that line. In the second episode, we meet Randy's real parents, and the only thing that I remember about this episode is that his biological mom is the voice of Ida the Owl Lady from the Owl House, and I was so shook when I heard that. I'm getting so much better at recognizing voices, and I was just, again, just really proud of myself for knowing. I, like, sat up and was like, that's Ida, hello? Sauce Face was also a great episode. Candace sells hot sauce packets on the playground to make money for a drone. Also, great regular show cameo Easter egg thing. Candace has a regular show lunchbox, and I am here for it. Episode 3 is where we meet Becca, whom I hate more than Bridget. She is Emily's old college roommate, and she never stops talking, but only about her. There's a whole montage of her just talking through big life moments. Graduation, Emily's wedding, Candace's birth, just like, ugh, I hate her. I hate her so much. So then it turns out that Becca is pregnant with the Antichrist, which is like regular show level twist. But again, this is turned up to like 30. This episode, like as a whole, is really funny. I just cannot stand Becca. I hate her with a burning passion. I just do not like her. Like, that's another archetype in like animation or just like in general, like character wise. Hate that. I vomit. Like, literally, at the end of this episode, Becca is like, don't worry, you'll find a guy. And Emily's like, I'm married. You were at my wedding. This is my daughter. Like, ugh. And then she says, go to hell, Becca, and, like, slams the door. And then Becca's like, I am. Because she's, like, moving in with the devil because she gave birth to the Antichrist. She's like, you never listen. You never shut up. The next episode, I don't remember the title, but it's about Pearl, and I can't tell you how happy I was to have an entire episode focused on Pearl. I feel like she was really underused in season one. She's such an interesting character, a retired LAPD cop who adopted the son of convicted criminals. I just like Pearl. This episode, this is the episode that starts with a Nerf war, and Pearl gets really into it and slides across the hood of a car only to fall and bust her hip. But her insurance sucks, so she doesn't have the money for surgery, and she turns to water aerobics instead. And when she goes, she meets a group of fun older ladies that she makes friends with, only to learn that they're bank robbers. They pull a few heists together before Pearl finally has second thoughts, and then she turns them in. Again, I like Pearl. I would be okay with the whole season just about her. I just think she's a fun character. The episode right after that is called Cyber Matrix, and Alex gets addicted to his phone. Well, like, beyond that, he gets sucked into a virtual world. And this is a concept that's been done before, but the way they did it is really cool. Mostly just the end. So they're trying to, like, overwork the phone by doing a bunch of stuff. And Josh said that he's going to download every season of Friends in HD. And then Alex uploads a really high-def picture of his butthole. But the thing that finally does it is that Alex is asking it to calculate the 10 trillionth digit of pi and then multiply it by 2. And I don't know why that's the thing that, like, kills the phone, but whatever. And that's what crashes the phone. And then this super slow, distorted, warbly version of All Star by Smash Mouth plays as the phone shuts down. They took out a whole cell tower, so everybody's phones get shut off, and then everybody in the city, like, stumbles outside to figure out what the heck is going on. And honestly, there's a beautiful orchestral version of All Star that's playing in the background. And again, just, like, A+ music choices. I can't describe to you the feeling of just, like, the, like, serendipitous feeling that came over me as I was sitting watching the scene play out where it's just, like, playing this really slow, like, meme music in the background as everybody just wanders outside to wonder why their phones don't work all of a sudden. Just yeet. I tweeted in the moment that this was probably the best joke of season 2, but little did I know that the best was yet to come. But not yet, because I have a few more random things to say about season 2. There's an episode where Bridget falls in love with the ghost of a couch that Josh and Alex found on the side of the road, and again, just big regular show energy, and I'm here for it. The episode Birthdays features a really good Goonies reference. They get sucked into, like, birthday land by the magician that they hired for Candace's birthday party, and they have to answer questions about Candace and what she likes to do to, like, prove that, I don't even know what they're trying to prove, something that they're, like, worthy of being her parents or something, I don't know. But if they get a, there's, like, the skull piano thing from the very end scene of, not the very end scene, but, you know, the last scene of Goonies before they jump into the water slide and go find the pirate ship, the skull piano. And when they answer a question wrong, a piece of the floor falls out. Nothing else to say about that episode, just clocked a good Goonies reference, and I'm here for it. I'm always here for a Goonies reference. Okay, Time Hooch. Love this episode because at the end, they introduce something that could either come into play later or just be nothing. Unsure. Alex and Josh make this drink based on a song that they listened to in college, and it's apparently the key to time travel. I don't know. Alex is sad because he kind of wanted his marriage to Bridget to work out, so they decide to use the Time Hooch to go back in time and stop the fight that Alex thinks ended their marriage. Turns out that they fought a lot, so they go back in time a lot and end up back at the night when they met, and they try to prevent it, but Alex remembers that they did have some really good times together, and he decides that he doesn't want to completely negate their entire relationship just because he's upset. They've recruited, like, 10 past versions of Alex at this point, and when current timeline Alex comes in to meet Bridget, the Alex from our timeline throws the keg of Time Hooch at the past versions of himself, creating a wormhole that sucks them all in. Our timeline Alex gets thrust into the future, but all the other versions of Alex get tossed into prehistoric times where they get stuck in, like, amber or something, only to be resurrected by some scientists. Like, they set it up to make it seem like Alex is actually just a clone of a Neanderthal, and I really hope that that's something that they touch on later. I really hope that's a plot thread that we revisit. Okay, the very last episode that I want to talk about is called The Erotic Awakening of A.P. LaPearl. My God. I've mentioned before that I have the worst luck about watching the saddest or, like, most jarring episode of a show either on break at work or right before I go into work, and it messes up my whole day. I watched the Mr. Greg episode of Steven Universe on break at work, and, like, let me tell you, you are not ready for It's Over, Isn't It? In a room full of people when you're just trying to eat spaghetti. Like, not ready. I had no idea. Like, going into Steven Universe, I knew the overarching story of it, right? But I had no idea. I didn't know any of the music going into it, all right? So all of the sad songs hit me so hard. Not ready for It's Over, Isn't It? The first time, just being in a room full of people, just trying to eat lunch. Was not ready. So this episode starts with Alex reading from his latest erotic novel to the entire house, like Candace and everybody. So everybody gets, like, ugh, and, like, leaves really quickly, but Pearl is super into it, so she sticks around to listen to more. Alex gets a book deal for his erotic novel, and just, like, first of all, the shape of the building. I'm just gonna leave it at that. Like, This episode is fine, right? It's a good episode. I'm not saying that it's awful. But, like, when you watch the episode, imagine being in the break room at work, okay? Because that's how I had to experience this episode the first time, and I will never be the same. The person that signed him for this book deal thought that Alex was a woman, so she's hesitant to let him have this deal knowing that he's a man. And this is where the best joke of the whole show so far, in my opinion, happens. And I feel like it's going to get slept on. And so I'm just calling attention to it because I think it's hilarious and I don't feel like anybody else is going to talk about it, but I need to talk about it. It's funny. So the woman says that there's no market for an erotic novel written by a man. She says that women want to feel that they can trust somebody. Women want someone that they feel like they can trust. And she says, J.Q. Gwintel, and points to a portrait on the wall. And you guys, it's literally JG, or like Josh, because Josh is basically him, but like with huge boobs. And like, that was the moment that I had to turn this episode off because I just burst into laughter in the break room at work and I had to put my phone down. I don't know why. I can't explain it, but it just hit me. And I feel like this joke is going to get slept on, so I have to call attention to it. The rest of this episode is fine. Again, it's a fine episode. It's just, I will forever be tainted. Like, this will forever be tainted for me because I went in blind and watched it at work. I did kind of think that they were going to have Pearl narrate it, like, an audio version. Like, they did in the episode of Family Guy where Peter wrote Peter Rodica and it was narrated by Betty White. Like, that was the vibe I thought they were going for. Honestly, they could have just said J.Q. Gwintel and just cut to black, and that would have been enough for me because that hit. So, overall, this show is great. Again, it's super refreshing to have an adult animation focused on a group of people who actually like each other. Nice to have a married couple that loves each other and parents who like being parents. The ensemble cast is great here. I love their chemistry. And season 2 expanded on everything I loved about season 1. We got to know some of the history of Alex and Bridget's relationship. We got more of Pearl and even some more of Randy, who is admittedly also not my favorite character, but I did like his episode. It's just all around a great show. The show did get renewed for a season 3, so I can't wait to see where that goes. Again, I really hope that we revisit Alex being a clone, or maybe that this is all in his head, because at the end of the Cyber Matrix episode, everything kind of glitched out on him. Either way, I'm excited for more. I hope you enjoyed escaping into the world of Close Enough with me this week. If you're a fan of regular show and you haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend checking it out, but also the reverse. If you're a fan of this, check out regular show, because both of them are great. If this is your first episode of mine, thanks for checking it out. I try to cover a variety of animated shows, both new and old, so make sure to check out previous episodes to find your favorite show. And if you don't see it, keep checking back. I upload almost every Saturday with a new show to talk about. Also, don't forget to follow me on Twitter, @Kelby_cartoons. I've been live tweeting my reactions as I watch the shows that I cover. This week and next week, I'll be watching all of Adventure Time, so I may not tweet super frequently, but I'll try to update as I start new seasons and give my thoughts on the show overall. Adventure Time is scheduled to go up on March 20th. Follow me on Facebook too, just search Kelby's Cartoon Corner. I'll be back on March 20th to join you guys in the land of Ooh, and until then, happy Saturday, or whatever day it is, whenever you're listening, happy whatever. I'll see you in 2 weeks.